Just by a show of hands, how many people in here have a really, you know, have a good working knowledge of income tax returns, the 1040? Okay, so most people are. How many of you make it a general practice to ask your clients and prospects for the last 2 to 3 years of tax returns? Okay, good. I'll be preaching to the choir, and you'll see what I mean. If you're not asking for copies of the tax returns to analyze, somebody else may be, but I can tell you it's not going to do any good to pick them up if you don't know what to look for. So I'm going to share some ideas with you today. Now, these are ideas that are going to be where the location's going to, we're going to look at a W-2, we're going to look at the 1040 with the accompanying schedules. I'm not going into corporate returns. It's too big a, it would be too big a talk. So I want to try and focus it. And I'm not trying to make tax preparers out of anybody. It's just you want to have that knowledge so that you can get the information you need, because you never know how you're going to and where you're going to open an appointment. So let's start with the W-2. And as you all know, this is a wage and tax statement. The first thing you want to notice, if there's a difference between line 1, which is the wage and tip line, and line 3, which is Social Security wages, if there's a difference between line 1 and 3, it indicates that that person may be participating in a 401k, 403b plan, maybe a Section 125 plan, or both, or so that's one thing you want to notice, and that's easy to observe. Box 12C, that indicates, of course, that's the taxable portion of any group term life insurance in excess of $50,000. I'm sure all of you all are aware of that rule. But if there's an excess amount, the premium attributable to it will be located in that box. So that information could be important, because that could raise a couple of questions. Number one, is there a need for additional individual coverage? Is the client's employer a prospect to at least have their group term life insurance or other coverage reviewed? And, of course, is there any way to position yourself so that you can get in to see the employer, you know, to get referred in? 12D includes the following information. Now, the one thing about a W-2, the really easy thing, because I'm going to go through some codes now, the definition of each of these codes is on the very rear of the W-2. All you got to do is turn it over, you all. So if you see in that particular line, if it's code D, and don't worry about the codes, but let me just tell you what's going to be in there. Code D means that that person's contributing to a 401k plan. If it's code E, they're contributing to a 403b plan. If it's code G, then they're involved in a 457 deferred comp plan. If it's code S, that would indicate they're participants in a simple plan. It's a 408p simple plan. If it's code W, W will indicate they're in a health savings account situation. If it's Y, it would be a 409A non-qualified deferred comp plan. And then, this is relatively new, if it's code AA, that indicates they're making Roth contributions into a 401k. It's 401k Roth contributions, and if it's BB, double B, that means it'll be contributions into a Roth 403b account. So, and if they are contributing into Roth, into a Roth, then that brings up a great question. Why are you doing Roth contributions as opposed to traditional pre-tax? Or better yet, you could say, well, I see you're contributing into a pre-tax 401k, a traditional 401k. Does your employer offer you the ability to, you know, contribute to a Roth 401k? They may not even know what you're talking about, because a lot of employers still don't want to offer Roth accounts. Why? I don't know, but a lot of them just don't. Next, we're going to look at line 13. And that's to see, of course, line 13 is going to be where, if you look on the W-2, that's to see if the retirement plan box is checked. So after reviewing 12D and line 13, here are some things you might want to think about. If they've got a qualified plan, which in this case, if any of those things were filled out, they do, who can, you know, maybe I can get referred into their employer. Maybe who could I contact to talk about their plan? Because I will assure you, there are still many qualified plans lying around out there that have not been reviewed in many years, even though they would have had to have all new documents done at the end of last year. But still, a lot of brokers or people, you know, anybody that was handling that plan, a lot of time they're not even involved, or they're just collecting a check now. Because the only people that have to be involved in terms of doing new documents is a third-party administrator. Well, they don't have to have anything to do with the producer. So the best thing to do is ask. I'll tell you why. Last week, I had an appointment. It's a 403B plan. It's a very large one. I was referred in along with the TPA that I use, who's just terrific. And all of a sudden we find out it's a nonprofit organization, but they have a subsidiary that does government contract work. So they have a separate 403B plan. Well, I said, well, so who handles that for you? And they said, nobody. It's with a company that I know that when they said, well, who is funding it? Who do you fund it through? And when they told me the name of the company, I said, there's got to be, somebody's collecting a commission or a fee on here. I said, do you get any advice? And they said, no, we've never gotten any advice. So I said, well, how would you like to? Boom, there was a case open. Just by asking, we were just talking to the person in HR. So y'all, it can happen as simple as that when you're there, particularly if you're working I work in the small and mid-sized company marketplace because, frankly, New Orleans does not have any large companies. We have very few large companies, so that's really not anything that I can really go after. All right, so, you know, another question, what type of plan is it? Well, is it, if it's non-contributory, is it non-contributory or is the person not contributing? And if they're not contributing, why not? Whenever you look at a W-2, if you've got somebody making a lot of money and they're not contributing the maximum amount to a qualified plan, that's a topic for discussion. They may not even know that there are additional limits. They may not even know it. Or they may have been contributing a dollar amount, or in the case of a 401k, a percentage amount for so many years that they've just forgotten about it. And they forget about the limits and they forget about the other things that they can do. So this all just comes from looking at a W-2. Are they satisfied with their plan's investment options? And again, are the owners happy with the amount they can contribute to a plan? If you're talking to business owners, and those are the only ones that I'll work with, half the time they think that their limits, let's just say they're over 50, they think that their limit is $22,000 a year right now. I said, no, that's not your limit, not if you don't want it to be. I said, we can add an element on top of your 401k plan, and I'm sure anybody that's in the qualified plan business knows what a new comparability plan is, or even a cross-tested plan. But with a new comp plan, you know, they could end up, you know, based on the way it's set up, they can end up being able to contribute a lot more. Okay. And right now, that limit is up to, I think it's either $49,000 or $50,000, so they can. All it takes is being able to ask the right questions. That's it. So if there's, if there's no difference between line 1 and 3, that indicates that there's not a plan in place. So that would mean if you're talking to a client, let's just say they're the owner, Just start talking to them about the company. Say, well, okay, you don't have a retirement plan. How many employees do you have? How many do you think would participate in something if you were to offer it? You start talking about the various types of qualified plans to try and find out what might be a fit. But also note, I think anybody that's been in business long enough, you all know that a simple IRA plan, you cannot have more than 100 participants in that plan, actually 100 employees. So all I've talked about for 15 minutes is the W-2. That's it. That's the stuff that you can get from one piece, actually a half a piece of paper. So it's pretty neat stuff. Okay, now I'm going to go into the 1040. Now, what you're going to see on the PowerPoint, because of the way that I talk it through, I'm going to be bouncing back and forth between forms. All right? That's why I said you all will have access to this after, and it'll make a lot more sense as you're going through. So, as I mentioned earlier, you always want to get copies of the returns. If you are working with someone that says, I'm not going to give you copies of my tax returns, then I will tell you most definitely you're not going to get all the information you want on a fact finder. There's no way. If they don't trust you and they won't give you a copy, you're going to be missing out on relevant information that you're going to need. Now, if you think that, all right, look, this is somebody that doesn't know me, I've been referred into them, it's going to take me a while, I have to build some sort of relationship with them first before I get it, have at it. But you'll know the type of prospect you're talking to is to, are they going to just shut you down or it's, I'm not ready to do that. So, but you'll always want to do it. Okay. The circle here highlights, obviously, the filing status. And this is what is important. Come on, man. There we go. What's important is to take a look at the difference between marginal and real tax brackets. We all seem to refer to the marginal brackets, when we do any kind of planning or when you have any kind of software, it's just using marginal brackets. I don't know how many of you have ever heard John Huggard or seen him speak before, but he's a real authority on variable annuities, and he's a former professor at University of North Carolina and also is a practicing attorney. But he always reminds an audience that taxpayers don't pay taxes on their income at the marginal rates. They are based upon average tax rates. So let me go through an illustration. And I think you all have that table in there. Does everybody have it? Okay. Let's suppose, if you look at that table, it's a taxpayer, it's married filing jointly with $125,000 of taxable income. So they're in a scheduled 25% marginal bracket. However, their actual bracket is 18.9%, and I'll show you why. If you go to the schedule, you look at $125,000 of income. It's got a pointer in here. Okay, let's see. If you take a look and it's at 125, it's in this bracket in here between 67.9 and 137. What happens is you take $125,000, you subtract 67.9 from it. That gives you $57,100. If you multiply that times 25%, that's $14,275. Then what you do is you have to add the excess on here, that $9,350. If you add $9,350, then the total tax is $23,625. You divide that by $125,000, it's 18.9%. Now, you're sitting here thinking, well, okay, so that's a 6% difference. 6% might be the difference between being able to plan for somebody to either move them down a bracket or up a bracket. The point is, you're going to be king, because nobody else is telling them that. No one else talks about this. I guarantee you. Every client I have ever had, they said, nobody's ever talked to me about this before, not even my CPA. They don't talk to them. They're just interested in completing a return and, you know, collecting their fee. This right here can separate you from everybody, okay? And it's really very easy to do. So I'll go on. Let's see. The next section, we're going to look at exemptions. And that's line 6C. Line 6C is where any dependent children of any age are listed. So if there are any dependent children, why is that important? Well, number one, here's your prospect or your client. Are you planning to fund for your child's or your children's future education? What happens to your children if you should die, you and your spouse should die, or become disabled prematurely? Are there any dependents on line 6C who do not live with you due to divorce or separation? And if so, where do those dependents live and who is responsible for their care? You can open up a couple of sales right here by just simply asking that one question about dependents. If a child's not living with the taxpayer due to divorce or separation, you know, one of the first things that comes to mind is, obviously, it's the possibility of a life insurance sale, along with the establishment, perhaps, of some form of trust, certainly to protect the assets, because the whole idea is, if I'm not married to this person anymore, and I don't think they have a very good mind for managing money, I certainly don't want them to have power over those assets if I should die. And it's different in every state, but in Louisiana, if there's no will, there's no trust or whatever, that ex-spouse gets control of that money until, obviously, a child becomes age of majority. The problem with age of majority, and I don't know what it is in Utah, but it's 18 where I live. Do you know any 18-year-olds that know how to manage money? Yeah, nobody. So it's really good idea to plan. Also ask how much a spouse was required to buy if it's a divorce. You know, what type of coverage it was. When was the last time it was reviewed? You might open up something that way. Other dependents that you want to look for. Is it an elderly parent being claimed as a dependent? Because if it is, the tax filers, which in this case are the children or a child, are obviously very well aware of caring for their elderly parents or another family member and may be very good prospects for long-term care, estate planning, elder care planning, possible. So just make sure and ask if any of that has been done. A lot of times there has been, but you never know. Maybe the dependent on this line is a special needs child. So if they are, the parents are prospects certainly for a special needs trust, life insurance planning to take care of the long-term needs of this child, and they may also already have other assets set aside to fund the trust, other investment assets. Line 7 is the sum of all the amounts in Block 1 on the W-2 form. So next we're going to look at line 8B. And I know it's getting kind of small, so just bear with me. 8B regards tax-exempt interest, which, of course, is only generated by municipal bonds. And even though municipal bond interest isn't taxable, tax-exempt interest is included with all other income to determine the portion of a person's Social Security that may be taxable, if they're not watching out or if they're taking it early. So that's an important question perhaps to ask. You know, is all this tax-exempt income causing any Social Security benefits to be taxable? If they're not living on this tax-exempt interest, well, do you think you can reposition it for them? Yeah, reposition some of these assets. If it's just tax-free municipal bonds, they don't need the income, and they're subject to market risk, Why don't you think, if it's appropriate age and everything is right, why don't you think about a tax-deferred annuity, a flexible premium tax-deferred annuity, or an immediate annuity if they need the income? Maybe a cash-rich life insurance policy, but of course, you know, depending upon age, that may not be appropriate at all. So repositioning these assets into either life insurance or annuities, that takes the income off the return completely. Line 8A, well, I'm sorry. See, I gotta go. Let's see. Okay. Line 8A on the 1040 deals with taxable interest, which is on Schedule B. And line 9A on the 1040 deals with ordinary dividends, and of course that's also shown on Schedule B. So, what questions do you ask if you see anything here? Well, is the taxpayer receiving a lot of interest income from banks? Are they receiving the interest as income, or are they accumulating it? If the purpose of those assets is long-term growth, then why are they invested in short-term assets? And of course, could that interest cause Social Security income to be taxed? So, hypothetical. Let's suppose in the interest column, you recognize the name of banks, and there's $10,000 of interest in there. And maybe you're thinking, well, what's an average CD rate right now? Maybe 2%, maybe less, maybe a little bit more. Well, that's a pretty quick conversion. If you take $10,000 at 2%, that's $500,000 of cash sitting in the bank. So maybe, just maybe, there's a way you can help them reposition that. Okay? If they don't need it. Some people will be a prospect, some won't. But again, it's a great... idea, or you know, perhaps for a tax deferred annuity or an immediate annuity. Certainly, variable annuities with the guaranteed income, type riders. And the way I'm thinking now, that's as long as these guaranteed income riders are available. I'm not sure how much longer the companies are going to have them. At least a lot of them. I think they're going to be removed soon from the market. So I'm not making any differentiation here. I'm not telling you what type of annuity to use, whether it's variable or an index. That's up to you. I'm just talking about purely the concept. This will not come up very often, but if it does, this line deals with EE and I U.S. savings bonds. So again, if there's anything there, how much do they own? Could that money be repositioned? Does it indicate a need or interest in education funding? Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's just the parents that have them. Now, there's one thing new for 2009 returns, and that was that refunds up to $5,000 may be used to buy Series I savings bonds. I would think most people probably didn't even know about that. So. But that was new for 2009, and it's going to continue. All right, in the area of ordinary dividends, if there are a lot of dividends listed from equities, from individual equities or mutual funds, then again, that prospect or your client could be a prospect. Maybe it's an annuity. Maybe it's tax-efficient mutual funds that they need, or maybe some sort of tax-efficient money management where a lot of gains are harvested during the year. And when you're talking about this, you certainly want to ask them about, are their assets properly allocated? You know, have they ever done any financial planning? Have the dividends from these stocks, maybe it was all inherited from somebody in their family and they've just never done anything about it. They may just have been sitting there. Part three, this will not come, you may never see this on a return, but if you do, this deals with foreign accounts and trusts. Number one, you'd want to, and if somebody will answer you, what was the purpose of setting up the accounts? What type of assets are involved, and what's their value? Have they discussed any transfer tax strategies with their other advisors? And you know, this is probably, this is a no-brainer, but they're obviously concerned about asset protection. So, gee, are you concerned about asset protection? You know, I know it's, we know the answer already. That's why they're doing it. But the whole idea here is that if that is checked off and there's anything in there, you can bet your client's working with a CPA or a tax attorney that is specializing in giving that kind of advice on offshore trusts and accounts. Now, that might be an opening to a new center of influence. Here's the thing. This could be an indicator of a great prospect. It could also be an indicator of somebody you want to run away from. This could be, you guys know what I mean? This might be somebody who I would call an unsavory character. And that could happen. I've run into this twice in 28 years. So that's what I'm saying. You may never run into this. But it's on the return. So line 11 on 10, is that line? Yeah. Line 11 on 1040, that indicates the taxpayer is receiving alimony as a result of divorce. If it's line 31A, it means that the taxpayer is paying alimony as a result of a divorce. In either case, it'd be good to ask, did that divorce decree call for life insurance or any other type of insurance to be provided? What are the terms of the divorce agreement? Who's responsible for providing your children's education needs, you know, if there are kids involved? Was there a quadro executed? And a quadro, as I'm sure many of you all know, is a qualified domestic relations order. And what that allows to be done is it's a penalty-free way that a spouse that perhaps is getting a portion of another spouse's qualified plan assets, it's a tax-free distribution. They can roll it over into their own IRA. The fact that you can, if you even see that, or if you ask that question, very few people ask the question about a quadro, and many people know about it. There is also, and this is just as an aside, there is also an entire field now, and I may be preaching to the choir, and many of you all may have seen it. There's actually a designation that financial advisors can get now. It's, you know, like a certified divorce planning specialist. And look, I'm not sure about the state of Utah. All I can tell you is in my home state, when they say half the people in America get divorced, one out of two, it's true where I live. It's rampant. So when I finish this MDRT executive committee gig, that's one thing I'm going to go do, because they're all over the place. And attorneys, domestic attorneys don't have very few people that they can turn to. You would be amazed. They really don't have many people to talk to. So just as an aside. Okay, line 12, that's where we get to Schedule C. And on Schedule, all right, come on, here we go. On Schedule C, what that indicates is that the taxpayer has either a profit or a loss from a business operated as a sole proprietor. Now, if there's an entry on that line, you've got a great prospect for certain needs. Key person life or disability insurance, maybe individual disability, critical illness coverage, long-term care, maybe health coverage, certainly a qualified plan you could be talked about, and business continuity planning. Now there's one thing I want to, okay, sorry. Yeah, there it is. You guys can see it. There's one thing on here that no one ever talks about. And that is the section regarding expenses. And I've, in a lot of talk, when I've given this talk, people say, why on earth is that important? Well, it's important because you might be able to study the expenses in here and ask some questions and find some discretionary income that could be used to fund some of these needs. All you got to do is ask. This is also where, as you know, people hide a lot of, they hide a lot of their personal expenses, and you just have to deal with that. Line 13 on there is referring to capital gains and losses. And that's when an individual has either a capital gain or loss from securities transactions, property transactions, whatever. So, what are some questions you could ask? Well, number one, if you take a look at this and you see there's a lot of individual stock or bond or mutual fund trades that have taken place, you know, maybe, just maybe, you're talking about somebody who, in quotes, likes to be a day trader if they're doing it themselves, or maybe they're working with a broker who is churning. Okay? That might be churning right there. So, always ask that question. And because you want to ask them, well, wait a minute, why are you, you know, you told me you're a long-term investor. You know, your risk tolerance is moderate. Whatever you want to say. Well, then, why are you engaged in so much trading? I mean, tell me why you did it. And there could be certainly a good reason, but ask the question. And then, of course, is anyone overseeing that portfolio or providing investment advice? There could be a money management or an assets under management prospect. And of course, the other thing is always talk about risk tolerance. If you say, look, let me study all your statements regarding all your investments, and they say, you know, you've done your fact finding, and they say, well, I'm a conservative to moderate investor long term. Well, did you know that your portfolio says something else? Maybe they know and maybe they don't know. The point is, it's an idea. It may be a way to open something. And the other, so here's what I would say, particularly because people out there need our help, particularly in light of all these major investment scandals that have taken place over the last few years. Prospects, they are looking for professional ethical counseling from advisors like you. You have a tremendous opportunity out there. We all do. We have a tremendous opportunity out there. Okay, line 15A, that's got to do with IRA distributions. So a couple things here. Number one, is the prospect receiving required minimum distributions, or are they receiving more than the RMD? Was this a rollover from a qualified plan? Does the IRA account need to be reviewed, rebalanced, repositioned? And here's the most important question. When was the last time you reviewed your beneficiary designations on your IRA? You may have heard that before. Always ask to review the beneficiary designations on prospects or clients' accounts. You might find something that they don't even remember that they should have changed 10 or 15 years ago. And that happens all the time. Because remember, qualified plan assets, life insurance, annuities, remember, those assets go to the survivors based upon beneficiary designations. And they're very, very specific, and that's how they're going to get paid out. Okay, 16A deals with pension distributions. And not that there's a whole lot there, but it could be, you know, is it a pension or an annuity distribution? If it's an annuity distribution, is it from a single premium immediate annuity? And obviously the reason, you know, obviously one of the reasons people purchase a vehicle like that is part of the payments are taxable, part are tax-free. And maybe they like this a lot. And maybe they would like to do another one, perhaps. So you might ask you find out it's an annuity distribution, ask them when they purchased the annuity, how much principal they deposited, what period of time they purchased it for. If it's for a limited period certain, maybe they're going to need more income pretty soon. You know, who's the owner? Who are the beneficiaries? You know, are they interested in purchasing another immediate annuity or perhaps looking at a tax-deferred annuity? As you all know, in the Pension Protection Act of 2006, it's now allowed that a non-spouse beneficiary of a qualified plan can roll over the distribution into an IRA. And beginning in 2008, Participants who leave an employer can now roll over their retirement plan savings directly into a Roth IRA, but of course, if they do that, they've got to pay the tax on it. Again, the more you know, even if it's just little bits of information, you may know something more than anybody they've ever talked to. You just never know how you can develop a new client or a prospect. So take advantage of that. The question I always ask, do you want it like this, where you have to keep track of all this paper, or you do want to consolidate and make your life more simple? I mean, it's an easy question. Some people say, I'm going to keep it just the way it is. And then some people say, gee, you know, I did think about that, but gee, now that you brought it up, yeah, let's talk about that. It's just simple stuff. Line 17, that refers to Schedule E. All right, on Schedule E, that includes income and losses from rental real estate and royalties. If you see rental property exists, here's some great questions for you, particularly right now. Is there a mortgage on the property? Because what have mortgage rates done? They've plummeted. Have they thought about refinancing? Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. I run across people all the time that are still paying high rates when they should be going out and refinancing, you know, because they have very little debt that they need to deal with. Does the debt need to be protected? You know, that's what life insurance could do. If there are royalties, and again, in my neck of the woods, there are a lot of people that have oil royalties, timber royalties, things like that. Is this discretionary income that could be used for another purpose? Again, here's more money they're getting. What are you doing with it? Oh, I'm just, you know, putting it in the bank. How about we reposition that, take it off your tax return, and invest it more for long-term purposes? How would that interest you? I mean, just simple questions all the time. And I didn't mention in here also, just always remember to talk about disability insurance too and long-term care. I haven't really mentioned disability that much, but anytime you're dealing with somebody who is a primary breadwinner or certainly who's making a lot of money, be sure to ask about DI and long-term care, even though it's almost impossible to get this stuff underwritten anymore. And if it is rental property, just ask, is it residential, commercial? Maybe it's a strip mall. Now, I'll tell you why I do it, because I know a lot of people in the real estate industry. Every now and then, when I'm talking to a client, all of a sudden they said, you know, I want to sell this piece of property. I don't want to take care of it anymore. Maybe I know somebody who is looking for it. Or I can refer them to somebody who's really good at finding buyers. Do I make any money on it? No, but am I building up the client trust? Which is what I talked about this morning. Again, just you keep building and building and building that relationship. And that just takes you, it just goes really far. Part two in here, let's see. That's showing income or loss from partnerships or S corporations. This is the only place where I'm going to talk about partnerships or S-corps. And again, it's the same thing sort of as on a Schedule C. If somebody's a partner or shareholder in an entity where it's earned income that they're generating, again, it's the same thing. They might be eligible or maybe there's a key person, life or disability plan opportunity there. Maybe there's business succession planning or a buyout agreement that needs to be done, disability buyout. Individual DI, maybe this is a prospect for long-term care, a multi-life long-term care, which is a great sale today, or critical illness, or estate planning. Maybe it's a great opportunity for retirement, accumulation, and distribution planning, particularly depending upon the age of the taxpayer. So when you're doing that, you can just slide right into a discussion about the business that the prospect has. Get to say, tell me about your business. You know, when did you start it? How did you get interested in it? You just go on and on and on. This is all fact finding. This is all it is. Just using a tax return to do it with. Part 3 of Schedule E shows income or loss from an estate or trust. If you see this, obviously you're looking at a taxpayer that is probably a beneficiary of a trust. So you'd want to know, what type of trust is it? You know, why was it established? When it was established? What happens to it when that taxpayer dies? Get a copy of the document. Is the taxpayer the beneficiary of an estate? Is there a need now for more estate planning or life insurance? Is there a need for additional trusts to be implemented? So just a couple key things there. Okay, this line on line 18, that deals with farmers that are sole proprietors. I can tell you, where I live, I don't have any clients that are farmers, but you guys might, okay, in this state. So here's the thing, and I'm not, if you all have clients, then what I'm saying is merely repetitive, but they're business owners too. So they have all the same needs that same person that was filing under Schedule C does. It's all the same thing. From business continuity to life insurance to disability, but the key thing, obviously, that I know about farmers is that it's really important most of the time to keep the land in the family. So you've got a terrific estate planning prospect because it's obviously, if it's important to protect that land and if it's worth anything, then you've got an estate tax issue. Line 20A on 1040 is gross Social Security, and there's really not much we need to say about that since I've already said it. Line 20B indicates any Social Security that would be included in income. And what a lot of people don't know is up to 85% of somebody's Social Security can be included in income if they're making too much too early. So, just an idea. 25, regards health savings accounts. And if it's blank, if there's no number there, then you'd want to ask your client or prospect, do you qualify for an HSA? Are you self-employed? If they are, or if they're not, would your employer be interested in setting that up? I realize you might not be able to make anything on that because there's really nothing in it, but you never know where that's going to lead to. That's the whole point. A lot of these things that seem small and simple can lead to bigger things if all you do is talk. It's all it is fact finding. Now, of course, what's going on in healthcare legislation, that could certainly impact HSA accounts in the future, so that's really up in the air. Line 28 deals with SEP, IRA, simple and qualified plans. Certainly, if there's any self-employment income on Schedule C and there's nothing there, they're obviously a prospect for the plan. The other thing on a qualified plan, even if you don't work in that market, and you see that someone, or maybe they're the business owner, you could always ask them, I know maybe you're after the investment part, but you could always say, who's your third-party administrator? You know, are they doing a good job for you? A lot of times, they're not happy with who they're working with. Well, suppose you could refer them to a TPA that maybe you know or one of your colleagues knows that could do a better job for them. Again, it's just building more credibility, more trust. You're not going to make anything out of it except build a lot of goodwill. And of course, you want to make sure somebody's always contributing the maximum amount that they can do. Again, just something that I do whenever I see this, I always talk about plan design immediately. I say, give me your adoption agreement and let's go through it. Almost every time I'll find something in the adoption agreement they don't even know about. They said, what do you mean I have to do this? Well, it's in here. You don't even know you did that. Okay, so it happens. Okay. Line 29, that again, that refers to self-employed health insurance deductions. For anybody that is in the health market, or even if you're not, it's always important to ask about that. And with the advent and the passage of the PPACA bill, that's going to cause a lot of people to look at all of their individual and group coverages. So there's going to be a lot of, depending upon how much of that legislation stays in place, it could cause, well, it's causing a lot of turmoil in the marketplace in my state. I don't know if it is in Utah, but it's really having a bad, it's terrible right now what's going on. 32 is an IRA deduction. Again, if there's nothing there and maybe they should, you know, be setting it up, talk to them about a traditional IRA or a Roth IRA. You know, whether they can set it up, whether they can deduct it, you know, talk about beneficiary designations. The most important thing about qualified plans and looking at returns is make sure your clients are saving as much as they can each year. And if they're fully funding qualified plans and they want to save more, well, you just might have something available to help them out with. So it's very, very important. Okay. I'm always asked, well, what is this for? Well, if somebody's using a preparer, which is normally going to be a CPA, if they're going to sign off on it, maybe, just maybe, you can develop a new center of influence or influential advisor. I don't know who so-and-so is. Would you mind referring me into them? I'd love to get to, I'd love to visit with them and hear about their practice. Maybe that's another appointment. Just things that that come up. Okay. Okay, and this is on itemized deductions. Lines 1 through 4 have to do with medical and dental expenses. If medical expenses are high, if they're high, you definitely want to ask questions about what health issues are you having within your family. Maybe it was one time, maybe it's something that's reoccurring. That can get you into a lot of. Maybe it's special needs child, maybe it's an elderly parent, maybe it's, there could be a number of different things. But if you see high medical expenses, you definitely want to dig into that and find out what the issue is. You also, by going into this, what I do is just, I use it as a platform into discussing long-term care. Because if they're high medical expenses, now I said, well, gee, have you ever thought what would happen if you needed long-term care? You develop a chronic illness that you're never going to recover from, and you go through the types. Have you ever thought about that? This can definitely dovetail into a discussion very quickly on long-term care. Line 6, real estate taxes. Here's why that's important, because if they're high, you want to find out about all the properties that they own. Because if there's a lot of property involved and those numbers start adding up, you've got a wealth transfer prospect. You've got a prospect potentially for estate planning. And of course, as I mentioned before, when you're talking about mortgage interest or points, the big thing right now is, have you refinanced lately? Or is it time to refinance? There are a lot of people that still have individual mortgages, paying 6.5%, 7%. They just haven't thought about it, that today they might be able to get it for under 5% and cut their payments significantly. It also helps to know a mortgage broker. Y'all, you need to get to know this guy. That's great. I mean, there's a story right there, because you knew what to look for. So they're all over the place. All you have to do is pick them up. Okay. Line 14, that's investment interest. Again, what could that reveal? Maybe they've got investments that are highly leveraged. Maybe, maybe not. Line 16 and 17, that regards gifts to charity. Then, of course, there you want to really open up the discussion. Have you made substantial gifts to charity, either cash or non-cash? Are you thinking about making more in the future? They could certainly be a prospect for some sort of a charitable trust. Maybe they're a prospect for, you know, MDRT Foundation has a global gift fund. I think we still do, right, John? Okay. They could be a, you know, that's a possibility. They also might be a prospect to gift an IRA or other highly appreciated assets to a charity and do a wealth replacement trust to, you know, to deal with that. Just simple, simple stuff. So, how many times have you thought about this creating trust idea? I'll guarantee you, if you can pick these things up, just learn bits about it, and again, you all, you'll have this, so you'll be able to walk your way through it. You will be doing something. I get, nobody does this. I've given this talk many, many times, including in my, I've given this to my local in New Orleans twice. Nobody's doing this. They see it and they forget about it. You ought to be doing this. It's just terrific because you're uncovering things. You're uncovering problems that nobody else is bringing up to them. Their CPA certainly isn't bringing it up to them unless they happen to be a pretty sharp person. And tax attorneys, they're just worried about, you know, documents, you know, churning those things out, most of them. So, you know, I hope you have enjoyed this today. I am certainly open to any questions. If you want to learn a lot more, it's so easy. You go to irs.gov. You want to start reading about some of this? Just go there. You hit the, you know, you hit a PDF and boom, you can read about anything you want. It's all sitting there for us. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You're right. You're right. So, So it's really, this is really, really easy stuff. And I will assure you, no matter where you live, and I know I've said it, this is probably the fifth time, and no, I don't have ADHD, but no one is studying tax returns. They just aren't. They're not doing it. So if you do it, you're separating yourself from the other people already. And I guarantee you will find sales ideas in here. Guarantee you. So thank you.